From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, March 21st, 2025.
This Day in Maine is made possible in part by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 25 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath. Open 7 days a week.
Late Thursday night, Democrats in the Maine legislature passed a more than $11 billion state budget, but they did it without a single Republican vote. And Democrats say this is just the first of two budget measures. To explain what's happening, Maine Public State House correspondent Kevin Miller spoke with host Nicola Grisco.
So, Kevin, let's start with the highlights here. What exactly is in this budget?
Yeah, thanks, Nicole. So it's a baseline budget that pretty much maintains the status quo when it comes to state government. So there are no major cuts. There's no new programs. There are also no new tax increases. And it continues some of the biggest and highest profile priorities of the Mills administration. So, for instance, it will once again allow recent high school grads to pursue a community college degree for free. It will also continue to have the state cover 55% of K-12 education costs, and the state will keep sending 5% of tax revenues back to municipalities. And here's a comment from Representative Drew Gattine of Westbrook, the House co-chair of the Budget Writing Committee.
We will pay our bills now, and we will have the resources to pay them going forward as we watch what changes may come our way from the federal government. It tells all the people of Maine and the businesses that operate here that state government will be open for business when we begin a new fiscal year on July 1.
As I understand it, Democrats either didn't fund or they delayed decisions on some of these other big ticket items, right?
Yeah, that's right. So the biggest is MaineCare, which is the state's Medicaid program. It has a $120 million budget shortfall right now. So that's before we even get to July when this new two-year budget kicks in. This budget fills that gap so that the more than 400,000 residents who are on MaineCare can continue receiving that care. But lawmakers will have to go back and they'll have to add more money to the budget if they want to keep that current coverage, or they're going to have to make other changes to reduce costs. Now, Republicans have been demanding significant changes to MaineCare eligibility, and they also want to make changes to general assistance. And this has been a big sticking point between the parties, and this is why we ended up with this majority budget.
And Maine is facing a budget shortfall for the first time in years, right? And that's part of the challenge here.
Yeah, that's right. So the budget gap was projected to be nearly $500 million before the Trump administration started slashing programs or threatening to withhold all kinds of federal funding from Maine over the issue of transgender athletes. Governor Janet Mills, she had proposed filling that hole by cutting some programs, and she also proposed a few targeted tax increases. So these are things like increasing the cigarette tax by a dollar a pack and starting to tax streaming services like Netflix and Hulu and Spotify. But Democrats say they want to have those discussions, and they will have those discussions in what they're describing as a part two of the budget process. But they say they just wanted to get a baseline two-year budget in place. That way, state government doesn't shut down.
So let's talk about the politics here. There's been a lot of tension at the state house over this budget proposal, right?
Yeah, absolutely. This was a Democratic budget. Not a single Republican in either the House or the Senate supported it. Republicans have accused Democrats of essentially cutting them out of the process. Now, I have to say that's not quite accurate, at least not for the entirety of the budget discussions that we've seen at the State House. The two parties had been negotiating on a short-term budget to plug that $120 million hole in MaineCare. But those talks really collapsed because Republicans kept demanding welfare program changes and changes to general assistance. And then after those negotiations cratered, Democrats pushed out this two-year budget. So it's almost a bit of a chicken and the egg issue right now. Democrats say they can't trust Republicans to negotiate in good faith, but Republicans say they don't trust Democrats to listen to their suggestions, so why should they even bother negotiating? So here's Republican Senator Trey Stewart of Presque Isle making this point on Thursday.
Call it a majority budget because that's what it is, and explain to people why you're doing what you're doing. And if it's because you don't want to work with us, fine. Go ahead. Say that. But don't say it's because we need to pass something here to give folks comfort. I think what's uncomfortable for them is that we are heading towards such financial catastrophe, particularly as it relates with MaineCare.
So what does this all mean for the rest of the legislative session, Kevin?
Yeah, it doesn't really bode well. The distrust between the parties is very intense right now. We saw that Thursday morning, actually, when Democrats and Republicans in the House got into another floor fight in the middle of this budget debate, but it was over an entirely different issue. It was over the censure of a lawmaker over her posts about transgender athletes. There have always been partisan fights in the legislature, but I would say that this is probably the tensest and almost most toxic environment that I've seen so early in a legislative session in all of my years covering things around the State House. As far as what does that mean? The vast majority of the work that's done in the legislature is bipartisan, and I don't think that will change, but we'll have to see whether Democrats and Republicans can move past this kind of rocky start and actually come together on some of these much more difficult budget decisions that they're going to be facing because of the shortfall the Maine has.
That was Nicolo Grisco speaking with State House correspondent Kevin Miller. Governor Janet Mills' office also announced this afternoon that she signed the budget into law. They were welcomed into the U.S. with open arms under the Biden administration, but this month, President Trump said he would soon decide whether to revoke the legal status of some 240,000 Ukrainians who fled the war with Russia. Amid the deep uncertainty about their future in this country and the fate of their own, Ukrainians in Maine are anxious and confused about what to do.
I come back to the questions of where can I find a safe place again?
This woman, who spoke on the condition of anonymity because she's afraid she could lose her immigration status, came to the U.S. with her children through a Biden-era program called Uniting for Ukraine. She says she knows the program was intended to be temporary, but she says she's made a new life here. She got a job, learned English, and enrolled her children in school. And she says it's still too dangerous to return to Ukraine, where she says air raid sirens and rocket attacks are a daily occurrence in her hometown. She's also skeptical that Russian President Vladimir Putin would honor a negotiated ceasefire long term.
I don't trust these peace negotiations with Russia, so I believe it's only like temporary.
It's a commonly held view among Ukrainians in the state. Oleg Opalnik is originally from Ukraine and has lived in the U.S. for about 25 years. He says trusting Putin to abide by a peace deal ignores the history of Russian aggression towards Ukraine, including Russia's 2014 annexation of the Crimean Peninsula.
You know, you can't just tell Putin, oh, let's make a deal, you know. Maybe you take this and we'll take this, you know. No, he wants all. That's his plan.
In the last 3 years, Opalnik says he's helped about 100 people resettle in Maine through Uniting for Ukraine. But President Trump canceled that program and made comments this month suggesting he could revoke humanitarian parole protections for Ukrainians already in the U.S. Opalnik says that has stoked widespread fear.
A lot of families lost everything in Ukraine, or they cannot go there because there's still war over there, you know? And if they lose status here, what next?
As far as I've seen, Ukraine is the only country where they actually threatened to revoke the current parole status.
Lisa Parisio is with the Portland-based Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project. She says it's part of a larger push to end a number of Biden-era immigration programs, including for people fleeing Venezuela, Nicaragua, Cuba, Haiti, and Afghanistan. Parisio says those already in the country can pursue other legal pathways, including asylum and temporary protected status, or TPS. But she says TPS is also in the crosshairs.
We know that the administration is targeting TPS broadly. They have already taken steps to terminate TPS for Venezuela.
Those moves, like much of the administration's immigration agenda, are being challenged in court. Meanwhile, another Ukrainian woman in Maine, who also spoke on the condition of anonymity, says when she first fled the war, she knew her stay in the U.S. would be temporary. But she says she got a job she loves and has built a community here. If she loses her legal status, she says she'd return to Ukraine to rejoin her family, who are living under the constant threat of Russian attacks.
They almost don't talk about what's going on, about missile attacks. They just got used to this. And for me, being here, I can't really understand how it's possible to get used to this danger, everyday danger.
For now, she says the uncertainty has pushed her to enjoy every moment of her life in the U.S., because she doesn't know how much longer she'll be able to stay. More than 3,000 fans braved rainy conditions last night to watch the inaugural match of Maine's new minor league soccer team. The Hearts of Pine took home a win And as Maddie Smith reports, the game was also a win for Maine soccer fans who've been waiting for years to see the team play.
Professional soccer made its Maine debut at Lewiston High School as renovations to Portland's Fitzpatrick Stadium, the Hearts of Pines home field, are still underway. Donald Thibodeau, co-chair of the Dirigo Union, the Hearts of Pines supporters group, says the anticipation for this game has been building for years.
It's a little surreal, really. I don't know if it's like real yet. I mean, it's been like 6 years, right? Like we've known about it. I've been following it. I'm just very excited and some would say very jazzed to be here.
In their inaugural match, the Hearts of Pine won 4-0 against CD Feylens, a Massachusetts amateur team. The contest was part of the U.S. Open Cup, a tournament that pits 22 amateur teams against 32 professional clubs. Walter Varilla scored the first goal in club history on his birthday.
To be honest, guys were saying in the locker room I would get the first goal. I don't know if it's because of my birthday or anything like that, but that feeling is surreal and it means a lot.
The Hearts of Pine won't make their official regular season debut in USL League One until next week when they play Florida's FC Naples. Their first home game at Fitzpatrick Stadium is May 4th. This first game was a welcome opportunity for the fans to see their team on the field almost a full month earlier than expected. Head coach Bobby Murphy says he was proud of how his players performed and was glad they could do it in front of a sell-out crowd.
To be a part of something that means something to so many people is so humbling to me and to the players. It is not lost on them. So I hope it's just the start.
The game was a homecoming of sorts for 20-year-old Khalid Hersey, the only Mainer on the team. The Lewiston native and Lewiston High School alum was cheered by supporters.
From Maine, first one! He's from Lewiston!
Fan Alicia Ray says Lewiston is a soccer city.
And I was really excited that the debut was going to be in Lewiston because we both love Lewiston so much and want to showcase it to people who might only go to Portland for a lot of the season games.
Hearts of Pine! Boys to the tie!
With the win last night, the Hearts advanced to the second round of the U.S. Open Cup. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Maddie Smith.
And that second round will take place April 2nd at Lewiston High School, where the Hearts of Pine will take on Hartford Athletic. Conservation groups are intervening in a case they say could have implications for current speed rules that are intended to protect North Atlantic right whales from collisions with ships. The case involves a Florida captain and a yacht owner who were fined by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration for allegedly traveling above the 10-knot speed limit in a seasonally restricted area. Erica Fuller is an attorney with Conservation Law Foundation, one of the groups that's asking to intervene in the lawsuit.
Embedded into their request is a request to get a declaratory judgment that the vessel speed rule is not authorized by the Endangered Species Act and the Marine Mammal Protection Act. And that would be really devastating.
Ship strikes and entanglements in fishing gear are the leading cause of death and injury to right whales. The current vessel speed limits date back to 2008 and require large vessels to slow down to 10 knots in certain areas along the East Coast at specific times of the year. A nonprofit that serves older adults in Western Maine says the congressional budget that passed last week eliminated an expected $1 million earmark to support a new facility. Betsy Sawyer Manter, president and CEO of Lewiston-based Seniors Plus, says her agency has outgrown its current facility and needs to meet the growing demand for Meals on Wheels, as well as educational programming.
It's short-sighted not to invest this little bit of money into something that's going to serve these communities for decades to come.
Sawyer Manter says Seniors Plus still plans to break ground this spring. She says federal funding would have allowed the facility to begin debt-free. She says Seniors Plus has so far raised $3.5 million for the new building, which is expected to cost $5.5 million in total. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition on Maine Public Radio. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.